Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
Probably figured out this morning's focused on forgiveness, which was bound to come up at some point, considering the two hippie girls talk about it in the opening song. Because people are a little crazy, and you're going to have to end up forgiving them at some point. I think forgiveness is kind of implied in the title of the series anyway, because that whole issue of anyway, that means kind of implied that there's some issue of what they're doing that makes it difficult to love them, and it's usually something they've hurt you or something they've done to bother you or annoy you, something that requires a forgiveness to be able to love them anyway. And so I remember a pastor years ago sharing with me that there's no enduring relationships without forgiveness. You can't have an enduring, loving relationship with anybody without forgiveness. And in the context of that, it said that, you know, like in a marriage specifically or in a type of best friend situation that goes on throughout a lifetime, there's going to be anywhere from 5 to 20 major times where you are so heartbroken, so devastated, you wonder how you can possibly continue a relationship with this person, that you'll have to go through the process of very deep, painfully emotional forgiveness. And if that relationship's going to endure, that's got to happen. And then on top of that, there's a countless number of small grievances that are forgiven and overlooked that happen week in and week out in the course of a friendship, because we're all sinful people. We all make mistakes, and our selfishness is going to hurt somebody, especially the people who are closest to us, and they're going to be the primary people who are impacted by our selfish decisions. So if we're going to love them anyway, we've got to continually forgive and forgive and forgive, and then several times in our life go through the process of a major forgiveness. And what's interesting about forgiveness is, for the most part, secular psychologists and spiritual theologians agree with a lot of the issues surrounding forgiveness. And I think the only person who disagrees in the entire field was that lady there at the end, a psychologist, Jeannie Schaefer. That was that one you heard from there at the end. It's funny, she says one of the most profound things about forgiveness, and then says, I think, one of the most bonehead things about forgiveness. She's like, oh yeah, when it comes to forgiveness, you know, eventually just go away, and if it doesn't, well, it never gave me any heart disease, so what difference does it make? Well, interestingly enough, your colleagues in the psychology field beg to differ with you. As a matter of fact, the research and studies have shown over and over and over again, it causes major problems. Even heart disease in some cases, as a matter of fact. What they found through different studies is it puts somebody in a continual state of a stressful state of mind. That unforgiveness is a constant stream of stress and frustration. Other studies came in and says this stress that you have will impact your communication skills, your thinking abilities, your abilities to make wise and helpful decisions. Further, other studies showed that the negative effects of unforgiveness are similar to those who have gone through a mental trauma, mental interpersonal trauma. And so pretty much everybody else in the field disagrees with her as far as, well, it doesn't really make any big difference if you don't forgive somebody, eventually go away, and it never hurt anybody anyway. No, it does. It puts somebody in a constant emotional state of stress. It's an emotional trauma time. It makes it very difficult to make decisions. But as bone of a decision, or bone of a comment she makes, she also says one of the most insightful, profound things. And she says, forgiveness is a religious, spiritual issue. And she's right. Because you'll find as we go through this process that things break down on the psychological side of things. However, they both agree that it's detrimental and harmful. One of my favorite comments about unforgiveness was what Frederick Buechner says. He says, of the seven deadly sins, anger has got to be the most fun, which I just thought was hilarious. So of the seven deadly sins, anger is possibly the most fun. You get to lick your wounds and smack your lips over the grievances long past, and you roll your tongue over the prospect of the bitter confrontations still to come. You savor that last toothsome morsel of pain that you've been given, only so you know you can be giving it back to them. In many ways, it is a feast fit for a king, but the chief drawback is that you're wolfing down yourself. And the skeleton at the feast that's left over is your own. And so he's basically saying it's going to eat you alive. This bitterness and unforgiveness eat you alive in the same way the psychologist says it puts you in this constant state of emotional stress, and it's like a traumatic event that you're going through, and it will tear you up on the inside. Psychologists and theologians also agree about what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not reconciliation. They're two separate things, and the Bible talks about both forgiveness and reconciliation. And some people say, well, you know, have a hard time forgiving them because, you know, the relationship isn't reconciled. And we're going to see in the story we look at today that forgiveness happens, but the relationship, it doesn't really say if it's been reconciled or not. I mean, for instance, if somebody steals from you at work, forgiving them doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to get their job back. It doesn't mean that the relationship is reconciled completely. Maybe there's a difference. Maybe there's some relationships that they need to go their separate ways because it's a detrimental relationship. And so it doesn't mean you haven't forgiven them by saying, you know, it's best that we part ways. It just means that the reconciling the friendship and the relationship may look different. So we're going to talk about that hopefully next week. We'll have time for that. Forgiveness is also not forgetting. Some people think that, well, if you haven't forgotten, you haven't forgiven yet. You know, the hard part is you have a hard time controlling what you think about, but you do have the ability to control what you focus on and what you fester on. And you pretty much look at this like this. You will never forget anything until you've forgiven them. And once you've forgiven them, you may remember the offense, but the way you think about it will be changed. So it may come up, but your memory of it will be different and will be seen in a different light. And the way you, what you focus on in that remembrance will be different. Another thing is forgiveness is not condoning or excusing. Some people think, well, if I forgive them, that just gives them license to do it again and again and again. That's a misunderstanding of forgiveness. And both psychologists and the scriptures, you know, teach that and show that. Forgiveness is also not justice. Forgiveness isn't the result of you exacting justice or getting revenge or getting even, and now we're even, and now I can forgive. That's not at all what forgiveness is. Both also agree that it's really hard to forgive. And for the reasons why, it seems both scripture you find these same things and what we find in the spiritual world as well as in the physical or psychological world. We have a hard time forgiving because of issues of retribution or revenge. We want to get back. That's what we talked about last week. We love watching movies about revenge because it kind of makes us feel better. I love what Medea says about she's in the closet cutting up all those clothes. And she says, what does this solve? And she says, nothing, but it makes you feel better. And revenge kind of does that to an extent, but not completely. It doesn't really help in the end. Sometimes we don't want to forgive because we enjoy feeling superior to the other person. There's a great Seinfeld episode where they talk about having hand in the relationship. And the whole idea is when somebody's done something to hurt you, you kind of have the upper hand at that point, which basically amounts to you get the tiebreaker whenever there's a disagreement. Like when you're going to the movies that night and she wants to see a chick flick and you want to see an action flick, well, whoever has hand gets the deciding vote, right? Because they owe you, because they're in the doghouse, because they've done something. And in the whole episode, they talk about how you don't want to give up hand, and you don't want to mess up, because if you mess up, well, then they'll have hand, and they'll have the upper hand on everything. And so sometimes we don't want to forgive because we like having something on them, especially around the office place, because when you have dirt on somebody, then it gets you out of having to clean the office microwave, or it gets you out of having to work overtime. Why? Because if they don't, you know, you're gonna spill the beans on them, so you kind of like having that over them. Sometimes there's things where we're being a victim in a certain situation. This is kind of interesting. It's almost like as if our identity has become intertwined with being a victim. Our identity's kind of become intertwined or been defined by this thing that happened to us. And it's so much a part of our personality, we're almost afraid of how we'll deal with relationships if we ever move out of this victim mentality or of being defined by this event or tragedy or loss. And maybe you're a widow or maybe you're a grieving parent or maybe it was over a marriage or a divorce. And so your kind of whole life is defined by that. And you're kind of afraid to move out of that because you're afraid of what your new identity might be like or what it might entail. And so you sort of stay in that moment. So they both sort of agree on what keeps us from forgiving and that it's very difficult and painful if you don't forgive, and they both agree on what forgiveness is and is not. However, things kind of break down after that. Once you start looking at what the psychological field has to offer, they have a lot of great diagnoses, but they don't have a cure. They don't seem to give that. That's why she says forgiveness is a religious issue. It's a spiritual issue, because we don't really have a good cure in the psychological realm. And in the psychology, what you'll find is that they do a really good job of diagnosing and almost kind of convince you that the diagnosis is the cure. It's kind of like how you feel better if you go to the doctor and they give you a diagnosis, even if it doesn't mean anything. Like two of my favorites are, you have an idiopathic cardiomyopathy. Oh, okay, well, at least you know what's going on. All right, I got an idiopathic cardiomyopathy. All right, you know what that means? It means there's something weird going on with your heart and we don't have a clue what it is or why it's happening. That's what the doctor's saying to you. They just said it in Latin, and it sounds better. So you can go home, and you pay a couple $100 to get that diagnosis. Oh, I got an idiopathic cardiomyopathy. They've seen this before. Yeah, they've seen a lot of things. They have no idea what they are. And that's pretty much what category you're in. So you walk out of there feeling like you've been diagnosed and everything's under control. But in reality, the doctor sort of told you, I don't know what's going on. And usually it's followed by, we're going to run tests, right? That's kind of, you go into that whole purgatory of run tests sort of thing. Why? Because they don't have a clue what's going on. Or my other favorite one, I had a friend of mine who had this rash on his arm. And since my dad's a doctor, when he's over at the house, he goes, hey, Dr. Bob, can you look at my arm and tell me what I got going on? He goes, oh, yeah, you've got some sort of contact dermatitis there. Oh, it's contact dermatitis. And I'm laughing. And he's like, what? All he said was something rubbing on your skin, making it look like that. That's all it was. You know, but yet you think because you got a diagnosis, somehow you're closer to a cure. You're no closer to a cure. I could have told you you had a contact dermatitis. I would have just said something rubbing on your skin, making it look red. Doctor term, though, oh, contact dermatitis. Oh, he says, well, what do I got to do for that? He goes, well, you need to figure out what's rubbing on your skin and stop that. And I'm thinking, they pay you for this? You went to medical school for this? Anyways, I'm sure there's other things they learn there that I don't know, but amongst those are Latin. So what do psychiatrists say about forgiveness? Well, they say, well, this is from Psychology Today, and this is under the heading of how to forgive, which I think is very interesting because there's nothing in there about how to forgive. It just kind of gives you the diagnosis. It says, well, by forgiving, you're accepting the reality of what happened. Yeah. And you're finding a way to live in a state of resolution. Yeah. And this can be a gradual process. Yeah. And forgiveness isn't something you do for the person that wronged you. It's something you do for yourself. Yeah. I'm still waiting for the whole how. I'm still waiting for the source. I'm still waiting for what makes this easier, what gives me this power or strength to do this. And there's really nothing there on how to find the power or strength to do it because there's nothing that's there to offer. It's just a diagnosis. It could take a while, and it's going to be hard, and you got to do this for you. Yeah, but how? Well, I don't know, but you got to do it. You just got to make sure you do it. And if I went through looking for other explanations of how, and the stuff I found was, I'm just kind of sorry, I read them in other services, but it takes a long time, and I run over, so I'm not going to run over this service. Hopefully. But pretty much they're basically things like, well, you need to spend some time in meditation because that'll help. You need to just not focus on it. Yeah, because that'll help. You need to understand that you know, you really bear part of the responsibility for what happened. Oh, sure I do. Sure I do. Maybe you don't understand my situation there, sir. Or another one in there was, let me get that. This is my favorite one. You need to write down everything they did and be brutally honest with it, and then instead of sending them that letter, burn it. And as you watch the smoke flames rise up, you'll feel the forgiveness go. Right. I think you're smoking something in that thing that's going up if you think that's going to happen. Or whether you like it or not, over time, you'll just stop feeling the pain. So why not get to it now? Oh, right. Okay, so eventually you're basically saying time heals all wounds. We know something. Time doesn't heal all wounds. You know, I know a lot of people who deal with unforgiveness for years and years and years. You see them on Ricky Lake, right? They spend $100,000 on plastic surgery because somebody made fun of them when they were in high school. Then they get that bully to come back and they go, well, look at me now. Remember what you said? And the guy's like, no. Maybe instead of the plastic surgery, you should have gone somewhere to deal with the whole unforgiveness thing. Obviously they did, and that was the best hope they had, was I'll make myself look better, and that'll show you, and I can say, how do you like me now? Toby Keith will be my theme song. Bottom line, there aren't a lot of great ideas out there. It's just pretty much white-knuckle it. You got to do it. You've got to make up something for it. You've got to deal with it somehow, some way, because if you don't, it's going to eat you alive. So just get to it. And it's that sort of mentality that would cause Peter to ask Jesus the question that we're all asking. All right, well, how many times do I got to do this? And so Peter says, what do I got to, like, I don't know, seven times? Because back in the day, they used to think maybe three times. And you think about it, if you're doing it time after time after time, how's this work when you're sort of white-knuckling it and sort of grin and bearing it and sort of doing it on your own power? Like, you forgive them the first time. You muster up the power and the ability to forgive them. And then it happens again. And you're like, all right, I can be bigger than this. I can be bigger than this. And you forgive them again. And then it happens again. And you're a little frustrated, and you white-knuckle it again. You're like, okay, I can forgive him again. But, you know, somewhere around that fifth or sixth time, you're sort of only going through the motions at this point, right? You're frustrated, you're aggravated with the whole thing, and you're sort of saying you're forgiving them, but deep down inside, that resentment is building, and you're wondering, how on earth could I ever have to put up with a scoundrel like you? I don't know if this is worth it. But on the outside, you're like, I just forgive him. I just forgive her. And inside, it's eating you alive. And so Peter's saying, Jesus, how many times I got to do this? And so Jesus comes back with the answer many of you all probably already know. He says, not seven times, but I tell you 70 times seven. And of course, you all know the math on that is what? Excellent. Okay, stop right there. You're not supposed to do the math on that. It's supposed to confound you and go, 70 times 7, I don't know, I never got that far in school. I don't even need a calculator for that. You're supposed to say, that's too many times, whatever that number is. It's too many to count is the point. Now, some of you mathematicians are like, and I'm keeping record of all your wrongs. And you're up to 424, so you better watch it, buddy. No, the whole point is, at some point, it's so many you'll lose count. Remember I said at the very beginning, it's going to take a few major forgivenesses and countless number of other forgivenesses because it's going to happen over and over and over. Jesus' whole point. You can't have an enduring relationship if you're keeping track. And if your source is just a white knucklet, you're never going to get past six or seven. You barely get to seven. And you look at that 490 number, because that's, of course, what the math is. You look at that number and you think to yourself, there is no way I could do that. Well, you're right. Outside of a spiritual answer and a spiritual context, as the psychologist says, forgiveness is a religious issue. Because we don't have an answer in the psychological world for this. And so Jesus goes on to tell how and gives the reason for it. And he both kind of gives a picture of what forgiveness is, and he gives you the context for where do you get the strength for this. And it begins this parable in Matthew 18. And he says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like. Now, right when he says that, what he's saying is he's acknowledging this is a spiritual issue. This is not how you can forgive in the world. Because there is no answer for how to give in the world. There's a diagnosis, there's just not a cure. If you want to find the answer for forgiveness, as the psychologist says in there, it's a religious answer. It is in the kingdom of heaven. It is in the realm of the kingdom of God where you'll find the answer, because there is no answer outside of that. So let me tell you a parable from the kingdom of heaven, how things work when you understand life through a spiritual context. So that's how he begins his parable. And he says, it's kind of like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And as he began the settlement, there was a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold and was brought before him. Now, usually when you read this parable or you hear this parable in the past, you're sort of thinking there's a king and there's like this busboy who owes him this extravagant amount. Well, the amount that's owed is about $1 trillion in today's terms. There's no way a busboy is ringing up $1 trillion debt, okay, which is kind of where we get some of the disconnect. Most likely what the scenario is, you've got the king, like the Roman emperor, and what he's talking about here, his servant is like a governor over a region or a province, and he's mismanaged or been corrupt with funds to the point where he's run up a deficit. Now, you kind of have to suspend reality for a minute here just to kind of go along with the parable, because I know this is a parable about a government officials and leadership that's run up $1 trillion debt. Now, I know that that's just kind of hard to believe, hard to fathom, but it's just a story Jesus tells. Go along with it, ride along with it, as if it could possibly happen in some realm or thing. But somehow, some way, this government official, we didn't know if he was a Republican or Democrat, doesn't really matter, they found a way to run up $1 trillion debt, if you could believe that. And what happens in here is he says he comes in and he begins to beg. And he says, be patient with me, he begged, and I'll pay back everything. Now, a little insight to this. You owe $1 trillion and you're going to pay back everything. It's kind of like when the politicians say, we're just going to borrow from Social Security. Don't worry. We'll pay it back. And you're like, oh, no, you won't. You know, right now, our federal deficit in the real world, I mean, believe it or not, this is not a hypothetical thing, it's like $7 trillion or plus in counting. And it's estimated, I think one of the estimates I saw, that if every American could just chip in $385 million, we could pay it off. I'm a bit short, but I'm sure some of you could handle 1/1,000th of that. And it's an astronomical amount. It can't be repaid, is the point. And yet this guy is saying, I'll repay it. And here's why. Here's the psychology of what's going on behind this. We never fully estimate the damage we've caused with our sinfulness in the decisions we've made. We think we do. We think we understand the harm we've caused. And so we say things like, I will what? I will make it up to you. I'm sorry. I'll do better, as if that's going to ease the pain or hurt. We say, well, I don't understand why you're so upset. All I did was blank. You know, and we say things like that because we don't fully grasp the concept of the $1 trillion of emotional debt that we've brought on somebody because of our selfish decision. We don't understand the pain and the heartache and the sleepless nights. We don't understand the fact that they've been throwing up. We don't understand the fact that they can barely look at themselves in the mirror. We don't understand that they're dealing with this day after day after day after day. Even when they're not talking about it, they're dealing with it. We have no idea of that. And so we do things, we just come out and say, I'll make it up to you. Don't worry, I'll pay it off. We have no concept of the $1 trillion debt and really what that even, we don't even know what $1 trillion is, do we? None of us have a concept of $1 trillion. It's been said, like, you could start counting right now and it would take you something like 1,000 years, whatever, to finally get to $1 trillion if you just kept counting every single second to $1 trillion. It's an unfathomable amount. And the thing is, the guy's saying, I'll repay it. And it just shows we think that we know and understand the devastation we've caused, but we don't. We have no idea. And because we have no idea, when we're in the position where we've hurt somebody, we don't fully grasp how deep the hurt has been. And we don't fully grasp it. There's no way you can make up for that. You know, I watch a lot of stuff on forgiveness, and there was one where it was a DUI guy who killed this lady's husband. How do you make up for that? What do you do to say you're sorry for that? There isn't anything. There's no coming back from that one. And this guy is trying to do everything he can to make up for his wrong. And you can't. You just can't. And so he says, I'll make it up to you. And you got to understand, they don't understand what they've done to you. And the other thing is, when you hurt somebody, you have no idea what you've done to them. You think you know, but you don't. You just don't know how your sins and how your selfishness has hurt somebody. So this guy is kind of clueless on that. Then verse 27 is kind of the central verse in here. It says, the master took pity on him and canceled his debt and let him go. I want to spend some time on this. He says he canceled his debt. That's what forgiveness is. It's to cancel the debt. To say, you don't owe me anything. Because whenever there's an issue of forgiveness, there's an issue where a debt has been incurred. Something has been broken. Something has been taken away. There has been a loss, whether it be a lost opportunity or lost memory or lost innocence or something that you have taken from me. And I only have two choices at this point. I can either try to take it out on you or I can absorb the loss myself. You know, I take it out on you by slandering you, talking bad about you, getting back at you, trying to even the score, trying to do something to make you feel how bad I hurt, which is absolutely impossible to do. We gloat over the times when something bad happens to them if we're a little bit more passive. You know, as a Christians, we don't theologically believe in karma, but practically we're rooting for it all day long sometimes, right? Oh, you just wait. What goes around comes around. You know, if you go over into the Ecclesiastes, Solomon's like, yeah, but sometimes it don't. And it's frustrating, and you got to deal with that. That's the theological truth here. There is no such thing as karma. You can't be waiting for the karma gods to come around and do to them as what's been done to you. No. It's got to be a forgiveness issue because that's just not going to happen. So sometimes you can just take it out on them or you can absorb the hurt where you let it go. That's what he says. He absorbed the debt. And it says he let him go. And you let him go. That's where you let them off the hook. You don't hold it over their head. You don't keep the upper hand on them. You let it go. I remember as I was thinking about this, there was a time when I had a roommate back in the school. And you know how you pay rent at the beginning of the month, but you pay the utilities and stuff like that at the end of the month? Well, this was so long ago. I know some of y'all have no idea what this is about. There was actually something called long-distance charges. Remember back in the day? Some of y'all are old enough to remember that. Some of y'all are like, what, like a cell phone bill? No. Totally different than the cell phone bill. This is where they actually charge you by the minute for how long you talked, okay? And if you got a roommate who is getting a job out of town and they're talking with the job at length, there's a pretty hefty bill coming at the end of the month. Well, he got the job and he moved out and stiffed me with the long distance bill, the utility bill, the electric bill, and all the other bills except rent. And I was pretty frustrated by that because, you know, when you're back in school, you don't have a lot of, there's this crazy thing that some people have called discretionary income. I didn't even heard the term when I was back then. It was just, you know, you're barely getting by income kind of thing. And so here I am stuck with this, you know, I don't even know how much it was. It was a couple $100 or something. And every time somebody would ask me, like, oh, yeah, didn't you know, someone will get the job? Only thing that would go through my mind was, yeah, he owes me blank amount of money. That's only thing that would go through my mind. The offense was all that came up because I hadn't let it go. And I remember at some point, years after this whole thing, I was telling a friend of mine also from school, said, hey, whatever happened to, and mentioned the guy's name. And I was like, oh, yeah, the guy who owes me this money. And he goes, you think he's ever going to pay that back? And I was like, no, you know. And I was like, well, you know, if he had any conscience before God, he would. And he says, listen, here's the deal. You know what businesses do at this point? It's been a couple years. They just write it off. They just write it off. Why? Because they know they're never going to see another dollar of that. Now, they may sell it to some, you know, too big bill collector or something like that to try to see if they can collect on it. But as far as the business is concerned, they're not ever expecting to see another dollar from you. Some of you are thinking, tell me more. How does this happen? You're missing the point. So he says, at some point, Steve, you just need to write this off, man, because you ain't ever going to see this money again, so you just got to let it go. And I did. And it was neat because after Melissa passed just a couple years ago, it'd been like 20 years since I've seen him. He's actually a pastor. Go figure, right? I could have told you that as soon as you told me he was a crook. You were thinking it. I just said it. So what happened is somebody from our church here happened to go back home after they got out of the military and happened to join a church back in their hometown where he happens to be a pastor on staff there. I mean, you know, small world, you know, what are the odds? And they said, hey, can you pray for my pastor back then? Here's what happened, and gave the name, and he's like, what? I used to be his roommate. No way. And so he called me up, and you know, it's funny. We talked, and it was a great time. It brought back old memories, and it was just so great part in that time, you know, to hear from so many people from the past that they still care and would reach out. And it's funny, I didn't even think about it, I didn't even remember this whole debt that he owed me until I was preparing for this message, and I don't even know what it was. But think about if I still was holding that over him. How would that conversation have gone? Would it have been comforting or infuriating in that point? Infuriating. And you know, it's easy to not let it go. But by letting it go, it opened up the opportunity for that being a source of encouragement down the road. It's all because you just have to sometimes just let it go. And you say, so how do you do that? You've told me once again, and you're no different to psychology at this point. You've told me how it's done. So Jesus tells you how it's done. But he also gives you, or he's talking about what it's done. But how do you do that? Well, there's two clues. One is in the story, and the other is the story. The one that's in the story is it says, but the master had pity on him. Now, pity is in verse 27. Now, pity is a pitiful translation of the word, because in our English, it sort of brings about a connotation of condescension, right? Like when you have pity on somebody, they're sort of inferior to you because, you know, they're just stupid, they're an idiot, and they don't know any better, don't have enough, or they don't have the means, whatever, really understand really what they've gone. So I have pity on them because they're just an idiot or a moron, right? That kind of isn't really the context or the connotation of the Greek word here. It's more the connotation of his heart went out to him. It's a word that means empathy. He could empathize with his situation. And what happened is he just stopped for a moment and paused and thought to himself, what would it be like if I were in his situation right now? What would I need? What would be the context for that? And that is one of the greatest keys to beginning the process of forgiveness, is to be able to empathize and put yourself in the position of where they're at. Because what normally happens, well, this is not normal. This is not normal to empathize. What normally happens, what comes easy, is to sort of characterize them or to classify them or stereotype them or think of them as being defined by what they've done to you, right? She lied to you, right? Well, she's a liar. She's a scoundrel, a no good, a gossip. She's just a liar. That's all she ever is. I don't want to be around people like that. Mm-mm. She is defined by what she's done. And somebody says, you know, has the audacity to ask you, well, have you ever lied like that? Oh, well, it's different. You know, when I lied, it was something really different like that. You have to understand, when I did something like that, it was because I was, you know, kind of feeling bad. I didn't really want to say it. I didn't really want to confront somebody. And so I kind of lied really to protect their feelings. There's a lot more to it than that. You see, for me, there's a context behind it. There's a whole humanity and a story behind it. But for them, no, they're just defined by what they did, right? They're defined by it. One of my favorite names in theological circles is Miroslav Volf. Just like saying Volf. Sounds so. It's actually V-O-L-F. It's not W-O-L-F. It's actually Volf. Gosh, I get so ADD when I do this. Because there was like an ad on Bob FM. It says it's actually pronounced Vav FM. So I was thinking about that as I'm reading this. But anyway, so Miroslav Volf. He says, forgiveness flounders because I exclude my enemy from the community of humans, even as I exclude myself from the community of sinners. What happens, I exclude them from being a part of humanity, and I exclude myself from being a part of the sinful race. Basically, what it's saying is, he's pointing out this very thing. We look at them as being defined by their sin, not as having all the nuance that my sin has. Because I'm human, I make mistakes, I'm prone to make mistakes, and I kind of get carried away, and I do dumb things, and I wasn't thinking straight. And that's kind of what happens with me. But them, no. There's evil to the core with them, right? We don't even look at them as being human anymore. We've vilified them to the point where we've made them out to be demonic, in a sense, because of what they've done. They're defined by that. At the same time, he says, what I do, I don't identify myself with the community of sinners. I make mistakes, right? I have moments of poor judgment, but I'm not wicked, evil, and vile like they are. And so forgiveness breaks down because you can't empathize and you can't see them and their humanity and you can't see yourself and your own sinfulness. But empathy is where you begin to see yourself in their same shoes and you begin to identify, you know, I've done things that have hurt people too. But remember, it's also hard to understand just how much we've hurt people. So you've got to be able to understand that there's a limit to your empathy. And you've got to be empathetic beyond your own ability to empathize and understand and say, you know, I'm sure I've done things to hurt people in the same way, even though I haven't realized it. And they're probably not aware of how much they've hurt me by this. I need to understand that. And there's been times where I've hurt people and I've needed forgiveness. And so it begins to move your heart towards compassion because of the empathy that you have. And so I said, part of the explanation of how you forgive is in the story, which is this issue of empathy. But the other key spiritual principle that we find that you're not going to find anywhere else outside of a relationship with God is the story itself. And he goes on to say, this guy who was forgiven of this great debt, he immediately goes out of the courtroom and he chokes out a servant who owes him just a couple hundred bucks or a couple thousand dollars. And when the other servants find out about this, they report back to the master, hey, this guy you just forgave, he's just choked this guy out. So the master tracks him down. He says, what gives? I just forgave you a $1 trillion debt. Now you're choking this guy out for $1,000. What's going on? And he says, you know, that's it. You corrupt, wicked guy. I'm throwing you in jail, and I am going to sue you for all you're worth. And the point of Jesus' story is, listen, when you've been forgiven much, you should be able to forgive somebody of something so small. That's his point. That's the point of the parable he tells. You know, Peter, you wonder, how is it that you could forgive somebody 70 times 7? Well, when you realize that God has forgiven you 470 trillion times 470 trillion, is it really all that much to forgive somebody 70 times 7? And here's where he's getting at. If you just could pause for a moment and think about everything you've ever done, both stuff you've been busted for and had to pay for, and stuff that nobody's ever found out about, stuff that's just between you and God that nobody else knows. Just think about that list of all that stuff you've ever done. Now think about you're standing before God at his throne room at that final judgment of all time, and they begin to read out the rap sheet of everything you've done over your past 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. How long does it take to read out that rap sheet? One of Ron White's funniest jokes, he talks about getting thrown out of a bar in New York City, and while he's in the jail precinct, they're reading out his rap sheet from his hometown. And he says, you know, back there, they don't have computers. They just have this little Morse code thing. It's bumping these things out, beep, 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 out of his, you know, whole rap sheet. And part of the joke that's so funny is he, like, keeps beeping for a long time. He goes, yeah, I got in a lot of trouble. What would it be like for you and me if we were standing there before God? How long is that little Morse code going to be tapping out before the batteries run out? And they have to put out some new paper and put in new batteries to keep it going, to list out all the stuff that we've ever done before God. And Jesus says, your heavenly Father's forgiven all of that. No questions asked. It's all been forgiven. So how could you possibly hold anything against whatever somebody else has done against you? I mean, if you think about your long list and all the great grievances of all the hurt and all the pain that you've contributed to in this world, and you're all hung up over this one little thing somebody's done. I'm not denying it's not huge. I'm not denying it's not difficult. But I'm saying when you compare it to what you've been forgiven of and what you've done, is it not like comparing a $1 trillion debt with something that's a few thousand dollars? And you see, some of you, your heart is so hard and so bitter and so cold on this that you still can't see it. You're thinking, well, you know, I've done a lot of stuff, but I never did anything this bad. Well, you know, you can't realize, you can't fathom how much hurt and pain you've caused. How much hurt and pain have you caused your own parents? Think about that. You will probably never know the heartache and the pain and the sleepless nights you gave them. You know, you think about this over and over again, the things you've done. And so the reason why Jean Schaefer, the psychologist, says it's a religious issue, forgiveness, she's dead on. Because outside an understanding that you have been created by a loving God, who set you here in paradise, and because of your own selfishness, you've contributed to making this place an absolute madhouse and a mess where we have a need for armed services, and we have a need for police, and we have a need for rescue. We have a need for ambulances and doctors because of all the sin and the heartache and the grief that we've caused each other, and we've all contributed to it. When you realize all these things that you've done, only that gives you the context to forgive. And for me, I remember something one of my pastors said to me was, when you fail in the process, you need to go back to your crisis. And what's going to happen is you try to forgive somebody. It's a hard thing, even with this understanding. You're going to fail at some point in the process, especially the major forgivenesses. And that's going to well back up in you, and the hurt's going to well back up, and something's going to trigger it, and you're going to get mad all over again. And you're going to be hurt all over again, and you're going to want to fester on this, and you're going to want to pick at this thing. And when you fail in the process of forgiveness, because it is a daily process, sometimes you have to continually remind yourself, I've been forgiven so much, how can I hold this against this person? When you fail in this process and it breaks down, you want to go back to the hurt, you want to go back to being the victim, and you want to go back to emphasizing on them and get the upper hand and all these issues, you've got to go back to your own crisis of need for God to forgive you. And you see, in my life, I'm not perfect at this. I still break down on this. And for me, I've done this so many times, because I know you're looking at me like, oh, he's a preacher boy. What have you ever dealt with? You don't know what I'm going through. I'll say this, you don't know what I've gone through in my life. Some of y'all do. And this is stuff I have lived out and worked out in my own life. And I've gone back to this crisis so many times, it usually takes me about one big deep breath to get through it now at this point. It takes time to get this fast with it. But you know, I'll get that, you know, that the energy will start welling up. You know, the endorphins start, you know, kicking in, and the adrenaline starts kicking in. I'll get really frustrated over what somebody's done to me. I just take that calming breath, and as I'm breathing in, I'm just thinking about and remembering everything I've ever done before God. As I'm breathing out, I'm just thinking to myself, this is nothing compared to all of that. And you've got to go back to your own crisis and need for salvation, because at the heart of it, forgiveness is a spiritual issue. And without understanding your own sinfulness before God, you'll never have the power to forgive anyone else. Would you join with me as we close? Father, I thank you for the opportunity that you've given us just to come before you and be forgiven. And, you know, people in this room are just kind of sitting here, and all of us are kind of at a different place with that. Some of us, we've confessed our sins long ago. There's some stuff, Lord, that we continue to hide from you, which is kind of a joke. But for just a moment, Lord, maybe we just kind of think and pause and reflect about just what we truly have been forgiven of throughout our lifetime. The hurt that we've caused. And Father, may I see the things that are done to me only from the perspective of what I've done to so many others. May the way that you've forgiven me give me the power and the source and the strength to forgive others. Just as you've set me free from these bonds and these chains and the burden, may I also forgive as well. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I know this is a hard message, and I also know that as I've been talking, there's been somebody that comes to your mind as you think about everything that's been said and shared. And as our praise team comes back up to lead us in our communion song, just want to ask, as you kind of wait in line, we come down the center aisles to receive communion. As you come down, I just want you to be thinking about everything you've ever done and what it is exactly that Jesus Christ paid for on the cross, because this bread is supposed to represent it. Jesus said, I want you to do this remembrance to me. I want you to do this to be reminded of that fact that I died. I paid the price for your sins. Everything you've ever done, doesn't matter what you've done, doesn't matter what you become, it's been paid for at the cross. As we come forward every single week, it's a reminder that everything's been paid for. He's forgiven us of everything. I want you to be thinking about that. And when you go to actually tear off that piece of bread, I want you to think about that one thing that you're having an issue and a hard time forgiving. As you dip in the cup, I also want to ask you that you would commit to treat this other person the same way that Christ has treated you. Because that cup represents redemption that has been forgiven. It's been set free. When he thinks about you, he doesn't think about your sin. He just thinks about you as a person. I want to invite you to come and to share in that this morning, if you will. Maybe for some of you, there's something on your heart you just need to lay before God and want to come to the altar and kneel down and pray. For others of you, maybe you just want to come and talk with Pastor Bobby and myself about a decision you need to make. Maybe there's somebody in here who's never really forgiven, asked God for forgiveness for their own sins, or still trying to earn that salvation back. There's an issue in this text I didn't even get to. The whole reason why the guy gets thrown back in jail is because he's still trying to pay off the master. That's why he chokes out his friend. He's trying to get the money enough to pay back the master because he doesn't accept the forgiveness he's been given. Maybe for somebody in this room, you refuse to accept the fact that God has forgiven you and you're still trying to earn back your salvation with God somehow. And this morning you just need to say, God, I just want to ask for forgiveness and give up on that. Whatever is on your heart, I just invite you to come, receive the grace, and be willing to give the grace also.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.